4, Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ira Melman. Violence at a Trump rally provides strong fodder for his opponents. U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump denounced a mass protest against him in Chicago last night as a disgrace and a planned attack. But his main Republican Party opponent said Saturday the tone of the Trump campaign triggers such disruptions. Trump said his supporters were taunted and harassed by the outburst Friday evening in Illinois, which he said was professionally done. As Trump moved to a campaign rally in the state of Ohio, some of his challengers spoke out against him. One was John Kasich, a Republican challenger and the governor of the state of Ohio.
Donald Trump has created a toxic environment. And the toxic environment has allowed his supporters and those who sometimes seek confrontation to come together in violence. There is no place for this. There is no place for a national leader to prey on the fears of people who live in our great country.
Senator Marco Rubio of Florida said at a campaign event Saturday, last night in Chicago, we saw images that make America look like a third world country.
This is a troubling trend that's coming out of the left, that they think they can just disrupt any event that there's a speaker they don't agree with. But I think we also have to look at the rhetoric coming from the front runner in the presidential campaign. This is a man who in rallies has told the supporters to basically beat up the people who are in the crowd and he'll pay their legal fees. Someone who's basically encouraged people in the audience to rough up anyone who stands up and says something he doesn't like.
Rubio and Kasich both are hoping to defeat Trump in their home states to prevent him from widening the lead he now holds in delegates pledged to support him. This is VOA News. Greece stepped up efforts on Saturday to move thousands of migrants stranded near the border with Macedonia to sheltered camps as spread of infections became a concern and two people in the sprawling tent city were diagnosed with hepatitis A. At the muddy tent city near the northern border town of Idomeni, at least 12,000 people, among them thousands of children and babies, were waiting to cross the border, although Macedonia and other nations along the so-called Western Balkan route have closed their borders. Scuffles broke out in the town this week as destitute migrants and refugees scrambled for food and firewood, while many have been sleeping in the open, often in the rain and in low temperatures. The top U.S. diplomat says the U.N.-sponsored peace talks on Syria should go ahead as planned Monday, that despite what he called perceived truce violations by the Syrian government. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has said Russian and American monitors are meeting in both Geneva and Amman Saturday to try to figure out how to reduce the violence in Syria. In Saudi Arabia, Kerry said the level of violence by all accounts has been reduced by 80% to 90%, which is very, very significant. However, Syrian Foreign Minister Waleed Mualem says the Syrian government remains committed to the ceasefire agreement, but its delegation to the peace talks will only wait 24 hours for the opposition delegation to arrive for the talks. A Syrian opposition official says the foreign minister is halting Geneva talks before they even start. Turkey's state-run news agency says the military has carried out airstrikes against Kurdish rebel targets across the border in northern Iraq, killing at least 67 militants. The news agency, citing unnamed security sources, said Saturday that 14 F-16 and F-4 jets were involved in the March 9th strikes, which allegedly destroyed ammunition depots, bunkers, and shelters belonging to the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or the PKK. The agency said the offensive targeted five areas in northern Iraq, including the Kandil Mountains on the Iran-Iraq border where the PKK's leadership is based. North Korea said Saturday its military is ready to preemptively attack and liberate the South in its latest outburst against the annual joint military drills by the U.S. and South Korea. In a statement carried through state media, the general staff of the North Korean People's Army said its frontline units are prepared to strike first if they see signs that American and South Korean troops involved in the drills were attempting to invade the North. KPA said it will counter the drills by the U.S. and South Korea. It says are aimed at advancing into Pyongyang with plans to liberate the whole of South Korea, including Seoul. I'm Ira Melman.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Many South Africans are very unhappy about the president's increase in salary. This is a president who has faced very serious corruption charges, who has used hundreds of millions of rand of taxpayers' money.
A South African opposition party say the Democratic Alliance petitions President Jacob Zuma not to accept a pay increase.
As he said, it's already in the past that he will step down, but he didn't do it. So this time, nobody believes it. Then wait and see.
Angolan President Eduardo Dos Santos says he will not seek re-election after his term expires in 2017. But the opposition party UNITA is skeptical about his pronouncement.
You've had over a decade of fairly sustained high growth rates. But you have to acknowledge that much of that growth was driven by high demand in China and high global commodity prices.
And analysts predict that sub-Saharan Africa is poised to develop into an economic powerhouse. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A cross-section of South Africans is not happy with the announcement of an increase in pay for President Jacob Zuma, which is set to begin next month. Mr. Zuma's pay increase will see him taking home $188,000 a year. But some opposition and civil society groups say Zuma doesn't deserve the increase due to what they contend is the poor prevailing economic conditions. Jordan Lewis, a member of parliament from the Opposition Democratic Alliance, or DA, told me his party has officially petitioned Zuma not to accept the pay increase.
Well, many South Africans are very unhappy about the president's increase in salary. This is a president who has faced very serious corruption charges, who has used hundreds of millions of rand of taxpayers' money to build his own private house. This is a president who has abused power in every way possible and who is clearly unfit to hold office. And many South Africans think that he does not deserve this increase.
What is the Democratic Alliance's position on this? Because some of your supporters asked if the Democratic Alliance, as an opposition party in parliament, can't do something about this pay increase.
Well, yesterday the pay increase was debated in parliament, and we argued very vociferously that the president should receive no increase at all. And we put two amendments to the floor of parliament for the vote. And the ANC, rather narrowly, I must say, won those votes, but very, very few of their members were in the House. And either that's simply because they couldn't bother to come to vote for their president, or because they actively wanted to stay away as a sign of protest. So it was very interesting indeed. But nevertheless, the pay increase did pass through the House.
So what's the next step in Parliament in your fight against it, if I may ask, since the ANC enjoys majority in Parliament?
Well, once it's passed through the House, it's final, I'm afraid. What we have done now, though, is that we have written formally to President Zuma to ask him to do the right thing and not accept a salary increase because, as a result of the fact that the economy is not growing, the economy is in a very tough position, facing an imminent a downgrade of our national credit rating, and many, many people are unemployed, and there really is a huge cash crunch in the government's finances. So we've written in to him to ask him to do the right thing, but I'm not optimistic that he will do the right thing.
What is the motivation, if I may ask you, behind the increment, particularly when the economy seemed not to be doing well?
Well, the ANC has argued that the president deserves an increment because it is a normal pay increase as part of the increase that all civil servants get. However, we have obviously argued that the economy is not growing. More and more people are unemployed. We face a recession and a credit rating downgrade. And in those circumstances, even if other civil servants like teachers and nurses get an increase, that doesn't mean that the president deserves one.
Recently, the Democratic Alliance moved a motion of no confidence a second time, perhaps, against President Zuma. What is the latest development on that?
Well, we are waiting for the Constitutional Court to issue judgment in the case about the president's private house, where he spent 246 million rand of public money to build his own house. Once we have the Constitutional Court judgment on that, we can move another motion of impeachment in Parliament, and then it will be very, very difficult to argue against that motion because there's a court judgment to back it up.
Do you think that you will have the needed impetus in Parliament when you move a motion of impeachment, looking at how dominant the ANC is in Parliament?
Well, usually I would say no, but now the case is very different because we hopefully will have a court of law, the highest court in the land, that will have ruled in condemnation of the president and in favor of the Democratic Alliance. And once we have that judgment, assuming we do get the judgment we seek, then the case for impeachment will be very, very difficult to argue against.
Jordan Lewis is a South African parliamentarian of the Opposition Democratic Alliance. He spoke with me from Cape Town. The spokesman for Angola's main opposition National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, or UNITA Party, says a majority of Angolans are skeptical about President Eduardo dos Santos's pronouncement that he will not seek re-election after his term expires in 2017. UNITA spokesman Alcides Sekala told me it appears the announcement is an attempt by Dos Santos and his ruling MPLA to divert the public's attention from what he says has been a dismal performance of the economy.
Well, we don't believe it because it is not the first time he says that. He has done it already in the past, but he's still there. So let us see and let us wait and see. On the other side, that's true, Mr. Dos Santos is a little bit tired because he has been in power for 40 years. It's quite a lot of time. But as he said, it already in the past that he will step down, but he didn't do it. So this time, nobody believes it. And wait and see.
There are some suggestions that Vice President Manuel Vicente is being groomed to take his position and that he's been groomed for a very long time.
Well, Mr. Vicente is now mixed up with corruption problems. I'm sure that you have been following the events in Lisbon. He has lost his credibility for the moment, which means that the NPLA and Dos Santos and its leadership are really in a very, very bad position in the country. Our assessment is that they don't have any more ideas of what to do within the crisis, the financial and economic crisis that the country is living today. So they don't have any options as a way out of the present situation in the country. So Mr. Vicente is lost completely any credibility if he had so in the past.
Members of the MPLA are saying they have credible and competent people to take over from President Dos Santos. You don't think they don't have that credibility? Why such skepticism?
Well, because the practice of Dos Santos, as he has done in the past. The idea that is running out in the country is that he's willing to have his son to succeed him. So we don't yet know yet what will be the position of his political party. But so that is not new what he has said. And also there is a thought here that by this statement, Dos Santos is trying to divert the public opinion from the difficult situation that the country is living, because Angola is in a very high social tension today. So the country is almost exploding because the life conditions have become very, very, very difficult.
Well, some people are saying this is just a publicity stunt by UNITA, and that UNITA doesn't find anything good that MPLA does or President Dos Santos does except criticism. What do you say to that?
Well, that's not true. We have been reading the signals of the time, so we are following the situation. All the recommendations that we have done since the war has finished, has ended 14 years ago, no one, they have not been taken into account because we have been recommending, the change of policies, which means to have a new attitude within the context of peace in the country. But overall appeals of UNITA have been ignored. And now there is a new development in the country. There is a strong position of the Catholic Church against Dos Santos and its government. I'm sure that you have been following. You have followed the statement of the Catholic Church in Angola. So they are really very, very strong, pointing the negative aspects of this MPLA leadership in our country.
Alcide Sekela is the spokesman for the Angolan main opposition party, UNITA. He spoke with me from the capital, Luanda. Many observers are calling this the African century because they expect the continent's immense natural and human resources to propel it to the status of economic powerhouse. Two prominent Africa-focused analysts discuss the proposition with viewers Jeffrey Young.
Many sub-Saharan African states saw their economies grow rapidly during the first decade of this century, driven in large part by international demand for oil, minerals, and agricultural products. Much of that demand came from China. That, in turn, led to more oil exploration, more mining for other natural resources, and the growth of African markets. As money flowed into state coffers, some African governments used the cash to make needed infrastructure improvements and to invest in other areas to lessen their dependence on oil and minerals. Just over 15 years into this century, Jennifer Cook at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington gives Africa reasonably good marks for its economic development.
Well, it's been generally good. You've had over a decade of fairly sustained high growth rates. But you have to acknowledge that much of that growth was driven by high demand in China and high global commodity prices. The last 2 years, as commodity prices have dropped, you've seen these countries getting something of a reality check on how much progress, in fact, they've made.
The World Bank's most recent report suggests Africa's economic growth is slowing down. In a January 2016 report titled Global Economic Prospects, the bank reported that sub-Saharan Africa's collective GDP, or gross domestic product, dropped from a 4.6% growth rate in 2014 to 3.4% in 2015. That was the slowest growth since 2009. For this year, the bank is predicting a continent-wide growth rate of 4.2%. Many of the African countries hardest hit by the economic slowdown are those most dependent on oil production. A year and a half ago, oil was trading close to $100 a barrel. Since then, it has tumbled to the point that by early this year, it was below $30 a barrel. While prices have risen above that level recently, Bloomberg Business forecasts that during 2016, oil is predicted to be no higher than the mid-$30 range. CSIS analyst Jennifer Cook says that while African states wait for commodity prices to rise again, they should make structural changes and expand their economies into other sectors.
How do countries in that interim period use this opportunity to enact reforms on fuel subsidies, distorting subsidies, to diversify both the economy and public investments, to diversify their tax base, for example, and to invest in infrastructures like electricity, transport, or ports that you cannot have long-term growth without.
She and other analysts say that a key element in making this the African century will be the ability of the continent's leaders to persuade potential investors that their investments are safe, that the days of nationalization and intellectual property theft are over. Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
Uganda has introduced a new bill that seeks to give the executive arm of government outright powers to control communications in a way the sector minister deems fit. However, opposition legislators, human rights activists, and some media professionals have warned of serious consequences if parliament surrenders its powers to the executive. My colleague Douglas Impuga spoke to Wilfred Niwagaba, an opposition member of parliament, and began by asking him what he thought of this bill.
Of course, the proposed amendment, in my view, is trying to usurp the powers of parliament to make laws and scrutinize whatever comes from government that is proposed to be made a law. One of the reasons why we included a clause, a section in that law, that gives, yes, the minister power to make regulations, but lay them on the table of parliament for parliamentary scrutiny, is to ensure that the regulations so made are not in conflict with the law made by parliament. And I have a strong feeling that, yes, now that our democratic space is narrowing day in, day out, government intends to use that delegated legislation, the right of the minister to make regulations, with a view to make regulations that will completely wipe away the rights of individuals, of citizens of Uganda, in respect of freedom of speech and privacy. And I will call upon my colleagues in parliament to strongly oppose that law, that proposed amendment, to ensure that the current law remains as it is.
Government shut down social media during elections. Now they are proposing this amendment to the Uganda Communications Amendment Bill. Do you think this is a slippery slope?
Definitely. Can you see how they, without any notice, Ugandans closed now social media? Of course, that one has its own legal challenges, and I hope the companies that were affected and individuals will come up and challenge that action of government. But now, if this proposed amendment is allowed to go through, then anything to do with the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press, and all those rights under those freedoms will definitely be strongly limited.
What are the chances of this amendment bill passing? Because the composition of parliament is still predominantly NRM.
Of course, over 80% of the current members of parliament have lost their bids to return to parliament. We do not know the caliber of the individuals who have been elected, whether they will be strong members that will be on the side of the citizens, or they will be members on the side of the ruling party. But actually, when you talk even of the ruling party, you're talking about the president, because I don't consider NRM as a party. So we hope the members who will come will be borrowed from their predecessors and stand by the majority of the citizens who want to enjoy their rights.
The president summoned these outgoing members of parliament to State House yesterday. Do you think that was the reason to whip them into line to support this bill?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't heard from any of those who attended. I don't know what was discussed. But I have a strong feeling that this bill may not be considered in the remaining period of this particular parliament. It may be considered in the next parliament. But whichever parliament considers it, I hope the respective members of parliament will see the danger of supporting the government's position on this amendment and reject it.
Wilfred Niwagaba is a Ugandan opposition member of parliament. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from the capital, Kampala. In the malaria endemic countries of Africa, it's not uncommon for pregnant women to become infected with the mosquito-borne parasite. The disease puts newborns at risk of death. But a new prevention strategy offers hope that expectant mothers will be able to deliver healthy babies. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
The risk of pregnant women becoming infected with malaria is very high in developing African countries. Researchers say 60% of women who showed up to be recruited for a prevention study had evidence of the parasite. Malaria is responsible for more than 100,000 newborns' death in sub-Saharan Africa each year. The disease can also cause infants to be born prematurely or at low birth weight, both of which are risk factors for newborn mortality. So pregnant women in malaria endemic regions are urged to sleep under insecticide-treated bed nets. Many also receive the inexpensive drug combination sulvodoxime pyrimethamine, recommended by the World Health Organization to protect against malaria. That was once the standard treatment for the disease, but the malaria parasite has become largely resistant to those drugs, according to Grant Dorsey, an infectious diseases specialist at the University of California, San Francisco.
We abandoned it, over a decade ago for treatment because of resistance. However, we're still using it to prevent malaria in pregnant women. So that was the kind of rationale behind our study, was that we felt that that this drug currently being recommended to prevent malaria in pregnancy may not be working.
So researchers have been experimenting with an artemisinin-based therapy called dihydroartemisinin piperaquine. In a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, Dorsey and colleagues report that treatment with the drug combination dramatically reduced the risk of malaria in a group of 300 Ugandan women, none of whom was infected when the study began. Some women were given three doses over their pregnancy, others received it monthly. A third group got the standard treatment.
The risk of being infected with malaria during pregnancy was reduced to 17%. And then if we gave the drug once a month, it was 5%. So just the risk of having malaria parasites at any time during pregnancy went from 40% to 17% down to 5%. And then for just having symptomatic malaria during pregnancy, the women in the standard of care arm got malaria, on average one episode per year, per person year. And that was 0.3 if you got replaced the SP with the ACT drug.
In other words, there was a dramatic reduction of malaria infection in the women who got the artemisinin-based drug compared to those who received the standard care drug treatment. Dorsey finds the results encouraging.
I think that this is a very exciting area, and if things play out as it looks, that this could lead to a change in policy and then could really improve outcomes for women.
But there are drawbacks, according to Dorsey, who says the artemisinin drug combination is more expensive and must be given more frequently than the usual preventive medicine. The World Health Organization has requested larger studies looking at the effectiveness of dihydroartemisinin piperaquine before recommending it to prevent malaria in pregnant women. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We will discuss the World Bank Conference on Land and Poverty. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, and coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And it's now time for music from our African collection selected by our capable producer, Odette Frazier. Enjoy.
My brain, yo, beautiful lady, yo, that can Africa lady, yo.
Aye.
See, I sing in the song for Panya,
aye.
And I dance in the dance for Panya, oh. I would do anything for Panya,
anything, yeah.
And I thank you the Lord for Panya, yeah.
baby, eh. Lady, eh. My panya sweet like a chocolate. When she come around, she a heavyweight. She a dance, she a move, immediate. Baby, yeah, yeah. Aya, what is my baby name, man? Aya, what is your baby name, man? I request for my baby girl. Panya, panya, panya scatter the fluff for me. Panya, panya, and I thank you the Lord for Panya.
Malika, Sineka, Karibo, Mipe. body na die you want baby. We're supposed to live like family. Hey, I know the lie.
Know the lie.
There's nothing stopping me. She dey feel my swag and I get money. I dey try my best to be somebody. Cause I'm living life. This girl dey make me higher, higher. I dey feel this baby. You no go believe. This girl na die here, die here. If you see this baby, tell him say she must chop my money. Chop my money, chop my money. Cause I don't care. Chop my money, chop my money. Chop my money, cause I don't care. I don't care.
Don't care.
I don't care.
Don't care.
I don't care.
Cause I get a plenty.
I don't care.
I don't care.
I don't care.
I don't care.
I know fear,
cause you know the empty.
From Lagos to London. All the blessings and love I see just make me they shout hallelujah. I say all the blessings and love I see just make me they shout hallelujah. They hold me for ransom cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. They won't hold me for ransom cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. Oh yeah, shake body. Oh yeah, move body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body. De calema, sagacité, équilibré, farotema, décalé, décalé, cricata, 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 pam pam. Somunto, somunto, calopere, calopere, calopere. All the blessings and love I decide just they make me they shout hallelujah. I say all the blessings and love I decide just they make me they shout hallelujah. They hold me for ransom, cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. They won't hold me for ransom, cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. Oh yeah, shake body. Body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body. Now designer wear now. I be take all the girls on a wear now. I'm the man of the year now. And my music they blow everywhere now. All the way from Haiti, the whole world now just they hear me. My haters just they fear me. And nobody feed that would hear me. All the blessings and love I decide just they make me they shout hallelujah. I say all the blessings and love I decide just they make me they shout hallelujah. They hold me for ransom cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. They won't hold me for ransom cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. Oh yeah, shake body. Oh yeah, move body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body. De calema, de calema, cricata, cricata, paro de mar, equilibre, 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 paro de mar, oya shake body, oya move body, make you ring alarm, oya shake body.
From the continent, we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, the Honorable Suleiman Tarawale, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, even without drum beats, the banana leaves dance. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, an area known as the Northern Triangle of Central America, social and economic development have been advancing slowly for years. Much of the stagnation is caused by corruption and the region's increased gang violence and international crime, as well as deep-seated issues of social and economic inequity and lack of economic opportunity for vast segments of society, said USAID Acting Assistant Administrator for Latin America and the Caribbean, Elizabeth Hogan. Through USAID and the State Department, the United States is working with the Northern Triangle governments to eliminate obstacles to growth and create an environment in which these countries are able to thrive. There are positive signs that the governments are serious about reform. In Guatemala, authorities arrested high-ranking government officials, including a former president, for corruption. Honduras began serious reforms of its national police, and El Salvador has developed a national security plan focusing on community-based crime and violence prevention. In support of these reforms, USAID is working to help these countries improve their economies and eliminate violence. USAID's economic growth programs are designed to expand business, employment, and educational opportunities for the poor and at-risk youth. For example, in Honduras, President Barack Obama's Feed the Future program has helped to increase the incomes of about 188,000 people by more than 50%. USAID's security programs focus on at-risk youth and seek to create safe community spaces, provide job and life skills training, and build trust between police and residents. In fact, each year, USAID's 200 youth outreach centers serve about 85,000 at-risk youth who are susceptible to gang recruitment and potential migration. USAID's governance programs help to promote strong, transparent, and effective governance throughout the Northern Triangle. For example, in El Salvador, USAID supports self-service tax kiosks, which allow taxpayers to perform transactions, reducing administrative burden and improving transparency. The governments of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras are taking steps to improve the security and prosperity of their people. Political will, in combination with improved local capacity, leveraged resources, and new partnerships, said Acting Assistant Administrator Hogan, will allow us to help Central American governments create a more peaceful, prosperous, and integrated region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.